positives that can come out of this. I think that the climate having a rest feels like a really positive thing.
Good morning, welcome to the Full Totness Breakfast on Sound Art Radio 102.5 FM with myself, Peter Shearn, and it's 8 o'clock in the morning on the 7th of September. Happy birthday, my brother. Thank you for listening, folks. The what's going to happen today? Oh yeah, Andrew Price is going to be joining us. Andrew Price works with Park Life, which is a group dedicated to sorting things out rurally. And we'll find out a lot more about that sort of thing later on. They were down at Longmarsh last Friday, and I think there's some more stuff coming up in the Follerton Orchard next Friday. So we'll hear more about that later on in the show. And, well, hopefully we will, if everything goes well. And he was due to be on last week, but technical issues prevented the program from going on. We had a connection issue with Sound Art Radio, so everything came to a flying halt. So we're starting off this morning with his choice of music, and he started us off with, well, obviously, Park Life.
Confidence is a preference for the habitual voyeur of what is known as. A morning suit can be avoided if you take a route straight through what is known as. John Scott Brewer's crew, he gets intimidated by the dirty pigeons. They love a bit of it. Who's that gut lord marching? You should cut down on your pork life, mate. Get some exercise. Except on Wednesdays when I get rudely awakened by the dustman. I put my trousers on, have a cup of tea, and I think about leaving the house. I feed the pigeons, I sometimes feed the sparrows too. It gives me a sense of enormous well-being. And then I'm happy for the rest of the day. Safe in the knowledge there will always be a bit of my heart devoted to it. You know, and it's not about you joggers who go round.
Park Life, and we have with us here Andrew Price. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning, Peter.
I trust you're well.
I'm very well, thank you. Yes, yeah, enjoying this sunshine, even though We could do a little bit of rain at the moment. I know the farmers don't want to hear that, but yeah, enjoying the weather.
Yeah, they've brought in the hay and the crops by now, I would imagine.
I think it's still going on. I spoke to or messaged someone on Moormeadows yesterday, and because we're looking at getting a farmer or someone to come and cut one of our meadows, which is too big to do by hand, and he said he can't get his cut either because they're all so busy at the moment.
Right,
so I think they're flat out.
Right, yeah, busy time for a farmer. So
very, yeah.
Busy for you as well. Now, park life, what is it?
So we call it a CIC, or a community interest company. So, and we've been set up, or Keith, Catherine and I have set the company up in the last couple of years, primarily to deal with small projects, working with community interest ideas and projects to deliver for the natural environment. So trying to target those companies or those organisations that need help to get a project over the line, or even to get that project started. So we also work with local authorities, parish councils, etc., town councils and districts to help deliver some projects with a community engagement focus and an environmental focus. So,
okay. So
engaging people with nature.
So to qualify a project for your attention, it has to be something to do with ecology and climate change. Would that be part of it?
It would be part of it. It doesn't necessarily have to be. Ideally, you would have those elements, but it's also about meeting other criteria. So if we're working in a park, let's say, or a private piece of land, it has to allow that private piece of land would also have to be able to have access to the public in some way, shape or form. So we couldn't just run a project on a private land that was a tree planting that didn't have a community connection. So there's always has to be a community connection to it.
Okay.
So that's really important and embedded in what we do and
right.
what we try to deliver. So
what inspired you to start the project up?
I think, well, both all three of the business partners have worked in various elements of the countryside. So I am still a ranger for Ivybridge Town Council. So I have a passion for working outdoors and connecting people with nature. But also it's about access and bringing people together and just realising that there is this crisis at the moment, not just with the climate, but with people not having that access to nature or spaces, and just that gap in where there aren't many organisations were delivering these sorts of things. So, yeah, filling that service requirement.
Right. Okay. And we just heard the bells. Had to be. We were warned about these. Where are you at the moment?
So I'm in the town hall at Ivybridge. Today, so yeah, every quarter of an hour the bells will chime.
You need to have a word with the person in charge of the bells, because it was at least 45 seconds early, I have to say.
I think it is slightly out, yeah.
So
it's all electronically done these days.
The outdoors then, where people have rediscovered during the pandemic, it seems, certainly this household has, there's been more people getting engaged with outdoor spaces because of lockdown. Has that affected your work as a ranger? And is that something that you've actually noticed yourself? Is it something you've seen happening?
Yeah, on different levels. So at Ivybridge, we noticed, and rightly so, just during, especially during the first lockdown, how many more people were out and about, just walking, exploring, and then engaging in the parks and green spaces. So we had a massive uptake on people, probably 200-300% higher than it was previous. So where some of the parks would have been predominantly dog walkers, it shifted to people just trying to find somewhere to go.
Yeah.
But fundamentally, I think there's a sea change going on, and I think we've seen it this year with No Mow May. There's so many more people wanting to engage with nature and leaving spaces for nature, and understanding that how desperately in need they are of our focus and our attention, our help. So,
yeah. And with No Mow May, for example, we did that here in our garden. But we have a sort of postage stamp of a garden in reality. It's we have a lawn, which is probably about 3 meters by 3 meters, something like that. Does that make any difference in terms of ecology and wildlife and stuff?
Definitely. Absolutely. Because our green spaces predominantly don't have chemicals on them. I know some gardeners still use chemicals, but most of us don't. And because of that, that means there aren't any insecticides or pesticides on our green spaces. So it's the same with public green spaces. They're not. So when you leave the grass longer, when you allow nature into your green space, then the insect population will skyrocket, which just has a massive knock-on effect. So things like migrating swifts and swallows will then have the insects to be able to rear their young. And without those green spaces and without those insects, we have just been seeing those sort of migratory birds plummet. And same as even with house sparrows, we've lost something like 80% of our house sparrows in the last 40 years.
Wow.
Largely because of insect, it's a complex issue, but largely because of insect population disappearance and the chicks not being able to eat enough insects. So they unfortunately just perish. And so, yes, your 3 meter by 3 meter green space is work doing wonders. It all helps.
Right. Okay. That's interesting. The other side of that is that just going back to the pandemic thing, as a ranger in Ivybridge, with more people going out on strolls and things, has that been a boost for you, or has it been a pain in the proverbial bottom?
I'll always say it's been a boost because I love seeing more people out and about, and the more people that engage in green spaces, even slightly antisocially, at least they're out in our green spaces, at least they're seeing their worth and their value. And then you only protect something if you care about it. So if more and more people start loving our parks and open spaces, then they're more likely to write a petition against to their MP or be involved in creating nature space at home. So yes, it's been a bonus,
a positive
for us.
And have there been any downsides? Are there things that you wish people would be more aware of when walking out?
I suppose it's the age-old one of litter. I think because there are more people out and about, there are people who understand that the countryside isn't there to be abused and will take everything they bring with them home, and then there are those who don't. And it goes with the job. And I used to work in Hampshire, and the litter and the fly tipping we used to get it in that part of the world was far worse than we get down here. So, yeah.
Better behave, Devon people.
Devon people are well behaved, yes. Maybe not so much the holidaymakers, but definitely the locals.
Very, very controversial. We'll flag that up as the main thing that you claim that Devon is better than. Where was it?
Hampshire. So,
okay,
yeah.
Let's get it clear who we're slagging off here. okay, and you were down at Longmarsh in Totnes last Friday, and I'd like to get into that a little bit more, but should we have a bit of music in between to sort of split that story up? And you've chosen Buck Rogers by Feeder.
I did.
Any particular reason?
It mentions Devon drinking cider from a lemon. I've loved Feeder since I first discovered them back in the early 90s, and they're still going, so they're a great band.
Looks like a Jaguar.
From the album Echo Park, that was Feeder and Buck Rogers. What did you say the reference to Devon was?
Cider from a lemon. I think that's what the...
yes, Andrew Price from Park Life we're talking to this morning. And you were at our lovely Totnes Long Marsh, the beautiful space down there, which was threatened yesterday by Georgina Allen, saying that people are... people want to develop over it, but I can't imagine that being possibly allowed because it's such a gorgeous space next to the river.
Absolutely, yeah. I can't imagine it will ever be on the cards. It's yeah, it's a very special place and has a lot of environmental and positives going for it.
Hugely important space environmentally, I would imagine, with all the reed beds and things like that down there.
Yeah, it's a real mixed habitat. It's got a bit of everything because it's a sort of a thin linear site. It's and it's got the estuary on one side as well. Then we've got a bit of woodland, we've got a bit of meadow. As you said, we've got a bit of wetland in right at the end there. So yeah, it's great, and loads of people get out and explore it. So. A very, very special place for Totnes.
It is. It's very, very popular and rightly so. And what were you doing on Friday? What was the last Friday you were down there working with South Hams, was it? District Council?
So, yeah, that's right. Yeah, so the site's owned by South Hams District Council and we're working with Devon Wildlife Trust and on a wider project we started a few years ago. I think it's about 8 to 10 years ago. Originally, the project started where we were collecting what's called green hay from the site. So green hay is where we will take a cut of a rich seed bank of wildflowers and transport it the same day. We need to cut it one the same day and then transport it to a new site. And then the hay gets distributed on a new piece of meadow, which as it drops its seed, then it puts that seed down and hopefully we get a new meadow created from that green hay.
So this is the propagation, basically.
Yeah, so we class Longmeadow as a donor site and then it goes off to other sites. And hopefully what's been happening through this wider project is the very first meadow which Devon Wildlife Trust mm-hmm. took the green hay to has also now become a donor site. So, and then it spreads and you get a network of these meadows. So,
what is it about that we have to physically get involved? Because this is something that would normally in real life happen naturally. Gaia or whatever you want to call it makes this sort of thing happen. But we're actually getting involved as human beings, jumping in there. You're doing this work to get this propagation going. What's the problem now? Why is that the case that you've got to do this now?
Okay, so there's a number of reasons why we've got to do it by hands. Partly we would have had years ago, our forefathers would have had large herbivores doing this for us. So they would have been breaking up the ground and chewing the hay and then redistributing the seed naturally. But also in the last sort of 80 years, we've lost 93%+ of our wildflower meadows, largely through draining for farming and development. And because of that, we've lost that biodiversity, that insect population and that meadow rich habitat. So what we're replicating is that large herbivore by cutting it by hand. In this case we're using brush cutters, but you can use what's called an Allen scythe or a scythe, and then when we collect it by hand and bag it up into bags and then transport it to the new site. So a few activities going on, but a very nice physical activity for people to get involved in.
And did you get lots of volunteers popping up?
So we had Devon Wildlife Trust brought along about 5 or 6 volunteers. We had Lynn Kenderdine from the wider project linked with Devon Wildlife Trust. So she's been involved with the project for years. And so she was there along with myself and my colleague Keith Reynolds from Parklife, and we had a couple of people from Southampton turn up. So, and probably two or three other additional volunteers joining in. So we had the right number for the day.
Right. So you weren't short of people, and you weren't oversubscribed. So it worked
absolutely
out about right. That's good. Excellent. And so, is it hard work?
It can be. It doesn't have to be. Traditionally, I think, hey, there go the bells.
Oh, there go the bells. Again. Yeah, again, yeah, 45 seconds early. Yeah. Oh, no, actually, it's 20 seconds, I would say. So not too far out.
Fluctuating. it can be. It's all up to the volunteer how much work you want to put in. So on this day, we were sorting some of it by hand. So we were picking out the more diverse mix of seed. And if there was too much thistle or docks or other unwanted brambles and stuff, we could pull that by hand, but that's not too physical.
Not
and
too
then
onerous.
The actual forking can be quite physical, but you know, you don't have to overdo it, and that's the good thing about volunteering.
Right. So we got more coming up in the end of this week on Friday, but well, I want to go into that a bit later. But in the meantime, what does a ranger do?
Okay.
It sounds like an American. You should be on a horse, and you should be chasing people off the land with pistols and things. That's how I imagine it should be.
I know. I've always had one of, like, the Canadian Mounted Ranger in my head as well. So yeah, I'd love a horse.
And do you have a fantastic outfit like a Canadian Mounted Ranger?
I don't. Maybe I should request one. general work gear, and we tend to be doing varied jobs, so it can be anything from maintaining the parks and green spaces, working with volunteers, creating new habitats, protecting the ones we've already got, engaging with the public. It's a many varied role, and that's what I like about it.
So what are you going to be doing today, for example? What's on the cards today? Are you going to be out and about?
We did a bio blitz the other week, and I haven't fully analysed the figures, so I'll be working on that this morning. So
bio
I'm
blitz,
getting that ready to submit.
Bio blitz, that sounds like something the Sweet might have sung about in the 70s. What's a bio blitz?
So they've become a lot more popular in the last sort of 10-15 years. They're a great way to do massive citizen science exercise. So they can be over short periods of time, a few hours, or some of them are up to 48 hours, and where you'll pick a site. And we use Fillon Park in Ivy Bridge. It's the first one we've ever run, and we ran it for about 12 hours, and we try to identify and see as many different species as possible. So that day we started off with some moth trapping overnight, and ended with a bat walk in the evening. So
so moth trapping, is that where you put a white sheet on the ground and see what lands on it, kind of thing? Is that how that works?
So that's a couple of things. So you can use a white sheet during the day and shake and sometimes under a tree, and you use that to shake the tree and then look at the insects that fall on it. So that's slightly different. And moth trapping is something we do overnight with a special trap with a certain light that attracts the moths around. And right. You can have a white sheet just because the moths will land on that,
yeah,
as well. And then you can identify them while they're landing.
Right. Okay. And do you get schools and things involved with this? Is this something that where do you get your volunteers from?
So at the moment, most of our volunteers are people from the local community who come out and give up their Thursdays to come and work with me. And we do get people from all age groups, which is great. But I would like to work more with the schools. It's just trying to make that link, that stronger link with the schools. So hopefully That's something we can do a bit more this year. And I think because last year just threw everything out, and that was probably what for me was the biggest downside from the pandemic, was not being able to have volunteers as often as we would have liked.
The pandemic must have affected what you do. Did you say that did I catch that you've been doing rangering in Ivybridge for about 3 years?
Yeah, we're actually coming up to four this December. So, right. Yeah, it so was a,
half of
a new
time
role.
It's been in a pandemic. That must be really weird.
Yeah, because I carried on working throughout the whole pandemic.
Everybody else was lazing at home watching Bargain Hunt on the telly whilst you were working. You must have been gutted about that.
No, not at all. I'd much rather have been out and about and watched Bargain Hunt. sounds torturous to me.
Oh, no, that's my ideal afternoon. So your work carried on as normal, effectively.
It most of it did. So things like checking the sites, maintaining the sites. We just couldn't have volunteers for big chunks of last year. So meant some of the projects were put on hold, or some of the bigger conservation side. But we did manage to start some tree planting during the last lockdown, and because we could have small groups during that one. So at least that went ahead, which was really good.
And also being outdoors, you're in a very safe space comparatively as well. So I would imagine that's a very useful aspect of it.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was surreal, but yeah, it was very good in that respect. Mm. I didn't feel unsafe at all during that.
So what makes a park ranger? What brought you to being one? How did you get into it?
Wow. Okay. Yeah. After multiple career changes, I started off working in accounts. I've done IT support and all sorts of worked in bars and restaurants.
IT support. That's like pulling teeth. I know that.
It can be a very stressful role, and I used to get bored quite quickly. And then about 20 years ago, I decided to go and do my arboriculture course. So learning more about trees and how the health of a tree, and went from there really to volunteering quite a lot at the weekends, and then taking holidays doing conservation work.
Right.
And then we moved to Norfolk, where I started my degree in Open University. Environmental studies, and at the same time started working in conservation, and that was it from onwards. I've been focused on the rangering.
Right. And Norfolk is an interesting spot, isn't it, because it's very the Broads, and it looks very much like we're going to have to give it up to the sea at this rate, at the current state of play. Is that something that you got involved with as well? Is that anything to do with what you were doing?
Yeah, on a couple of fronts. One, on the degree, I looked a lot at soft sea defences. So that was things like saltwater marshes, which we've lost more than two-thirds, probably 80% of, which is disastrous for this country, because we do need those sea defences. And soft sea defences are so much better than hard. And we were doing lots of felling and restoration work on the Broads, so physically. So yeah, saw it from two fronts.
What is a soft sea defense? I can imagine a hard one would be a wall, but what is a soft one?
So any natural sea defenses, so sand dunes, saltwater marshes, anything that was there before. And unfortunately what we've done is through agriculture and defending villages and towns, we've built these defences and reclaimed this land, and so it squeezes those soft sea defences. So saltwater marshes get squashed as the sea level rises. It can't retreat inland anywhere. There's nowhere for it to go. Right. So we end up by losing that. And what they do is they take the power of the wave action out a lot better than a hard sea defense does. Uh-huh. So it dissipates the energy slowly. Yeah. So
more naturally, more effective in the long run.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. You imagine, you know, these concrete blocks being pummeled constantly by the sea. After about 20 years, they start to crumble and collapse, don't they? That's the issue there, isn't it? But I understand that there is some acknowledgement or arrangements for the sea to encroach on parts of the Norfolk Broads and probably even the Somerset Levels, I would imagine, giving up that space and going, right, okay, we give up. This is going to be the sea coming in.
Yeah, it's managed retreats. And it's working. I think where there's some identified farmland that it doesn't make any sense to keep fighting the sea and saving. You create some breaches and let it become a natural flood meadow and then that will reclaim as a soft sea defence, which is brilliant, which is what we need.
We have a friend who has some land up at Norfolk, and I understand that the arrangement is that at the moment it's managed farms, but there's going to be a case where the RSPB have an interest in that space, and the RSPB will buy the land off them when it's no longer maintainable. That's a really bad word.
commercially viable, probably.
Thank you very much, Andrew. So the idea, the RSPB take it over effectively and it becomes a wildlife bird sanctuary. So I believe that's quite a lot of that is going on.
Yeah, and I think we'll start seeing more of that along our coastline, especially the soft coasts like Norfolk and Suffolk. And I think that's one of the solutions.
Yeah,
definitely.
Good. Okay, I'd like a bit more music. How about you?
Definitely. What have we got next?
Well, we've got you came up with this as a secondary choice because you said a friend of yours wanted to have this on the show. Pink Moon by Nick Drake. Who was it who wanted this and why?
So this is one of my colleagues, Catherine from Parklife, and I think she was worried I was going to pick too many just rocky songs, and she wanted something more diverse. So, so I got a nudge from Catherine to put this one on.
I saw it written and I saw it say, pink moon is on its way. None of you stand so tall. Pink moon, and I get you all on the pink moon. Yeah, pink moon. Pink, 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 pink. Pink moon. Pink, 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 pink. Pink moon.
As chosen by, did you say it was Catherine?
I did, yes, Catherine. As one of Parklife.
Well done, good choice. We've got things going on here in Totnes. On is it Friday? It's happening.
It It is, yes. So this Friday we've got some additional volunteering activities if people would like to come along and join.
Brilliant. And do people just turn up or do they have to contact you first?
They can turn up, but we'd rather, if people have got Facebook, there is we have a Facebook page, Park Life Southwest. So if people go onto Park Life, they should be able to find the events and either follow the events or like the events would okay. be great.
Well, we got a very high tech thing, which people might be listening to this on the podcast. And so we'll put a link in the blurb underneath the podcast so people can follow that link. So if you're listening now and you're on the podcast, click the link below to see more about it. That's what we'll do. So you prefer people to actually get in touch to arrange times and things like that? What is it that they need to arrange?
Yes, preferably at the moment, because we're still sort of gearing up to taking more and more volunteers, and it just gives us an idea of how many tools we might need. And but also we do have an email that if anyone is interested, they could just email into. So which is parklifesw@gmail.com. And so just drop us a message if you're interested in this or any future events. And
brilliant.
We can keep you informed.
And do you often come to Totnes, and do you go to other towns around the region? I guess you must do.
Yeah, I mean, Totnes is a particularly an area we do a particularly large amount of work in, but we also work in various other places. Southampton's doing a lot of work in Wembley at the moment, so there'll be quite a few tasks coming up in Wembley over the next sort of 6-7 months.
Yeah. Why is Totnes such a hub for you?
I think because it's one of those areas which has got a lot of people who actually want to engage in these activities. The town council and the district council also engage with us quite heavily. So we're doing with Friday, we're at Follerton Arboretum. So that's, I think we've got that amazing space there for people to use. So
it's,
I don't know, we just picked
space.
Up a head of steam there. So.
Yeah. Oh, good. So it's not necessarily sort of a biodiverse region or anything particular like that. It's just got people that are more engaged with it.
I think there's a bit of both. I mean, obviously, we're really lucky to have the spaces like Long Marsh and the Arboretum. But I think it's also the people and the council's general acceptance
engagement,
and
yeah.
wanting to work with organisations like ourselves. So. Mm.
And we've got the Arboretum is where there are loads and loads of apples. If anybody wants apples, just pop over to the Arboretum up at behind the council buildings there and you'll find apples. There's loads. So what are you actually doing up there on Friday?
So we're cutting some of the grass, the longer grass, some of the meadow. And so it's another hay cut, but it's rather than a green one. This is where you want to cut this and remove it because it's not as diverse as we'd like it to be. So if we cut it and rake it off, it just reduces the nutrient, which is what we want to do to try and establish a more diverse meadow, and then we can introduce more seeds and more varieties of grasses. So
if it's too
gives us a better mix.
Fertile, what's the problem with that? Is it that the growth goes too high and then wildflowers can't grow? Is that what the reason?
Absolutely, yeah. And so the high nutrient levels will support fewer species, so you just get the really dominant species taking over. I mean, that's fine for some areas where you've got a lot of nettles, because nettles are also important, but if you just get one or two grass species taking over, then they'll dominate and they'll shade out all the more diverse mixes, which tend to be lower down. So what you can do is what we call a topping cut in sort of March time, so it just knocks those faster growing species back. And then later in the year, around this time of the year, you cut and remove everything and keep the nutrients low. So the more you do that, the more it strips the nutrients back.
It sounds strangely counterproductive, the idea that you want it to be less fertile than fertile.
Yeah, well, you think of some of the really rare areas or protected habitats and things like chalk grasslands and things like that. They're really special because they are, in nutrient-wise, they're really poor. So you get these species that won't be anywhere else. And so you need to keep that sort of level of nutrient low for those species to thrive. So,
And of course, we use fertilizers a lot in farming. Is that a problem generally?
It is, yeah, for numbers of reasons. One is because the embodied energy in creating the fertilizers, whether that's muck spreading or which is obviously can cause air pollution, but also the runoff from it's really bad. So if muck spreading or fertilizers going on now, most farmland, especially here in Cornwall and Devon, is on a valley side. So when it rains heavily, which could do in a couple of days' time, then it just washes a lot of that nutrient, hasn't bedded into the ground, and it just comes as runoff, which then goes into the river systems. And our nitrates now and our water are a lot higher than they should be. So,
So that's bad for river life. But also, I guess, things like I know that Japanese knotweed is a major problem now, isn't it? With it's sort of running down river lines and reseeds itself along river sides where the nutrients must be so strong.
Yeah, so probably on rivers, we do get knotweed along river systems, and that tends to be because they might get strimmed and cut without recognising that they're knotweed. I suppose the bigger problem around on riversides around here is Himalayan balsam, so which is actually looks really nice and has a great flower the bees love. But
is that the pink flower?
It is, yeah.
Ah, that's... And right, I've mistaken that for the Japanese stuff, but
So that pop seeds which go into the water and then get carried downstream and then obviously reseed on any side of the estuary that's open space, and but doesn't tend to seed where it's overcast by thick woodland. So if you've got an oak woodland or an ancient woodland that's still clinging onto the sides of the estuary, that tends to shade out the balsam. So
is it a major problem? I've heard it is, but I don't understand quite why.
It can be. There have been various surveys for years about it, and it's trying to get on top of it. Because I live in Cornwall at the moment, and I think if you've got a river system that's overshadowed by woodland, you're fine. It's where you've got open land. If you have and it's becoming established, this before it sets seeds, so when it first comes into flowering, before it sets seeds, all you need to do is snap the heads off. Because it's an annual, if it's not setting seed, you'll slowly knock it back.
Right.
So that's the way to manage it. It can be controlled. So yeah, absolutely.
Just get out sometime with your scythe or whatever and knock it down.
Or a stick. Just break it.
Even a stick. So just knocking it over is fine. Okay. Well, when you went out walking and you see those pink flowers by the riverside, just knock them over with a stick.
Absolutely. Just snap the stem. You'll be fine.
Okay. That's a good tip for everybody out walking down at Dartington because there's lots down there. So you're going to be, what are volunteers going to be doing on Friday in the Arboretum?
So we're starting about 9:30, 10 o'clock and working until about 1. So this will be raking and forking any of the hay that we've cut already. And then putting it in piles and removing it from the site or to the edges of the site. And so that's one job we're doing in the morning. And in the afternoon, between 2 and 4, we'll be at Totnes Cemetery. We've got a little wildflower meadow on the roundabout, and that area also will need raking off and clearing from nutrient. And that will just benefit it for next year.
The roundabout is the bit in Tottenham Cemetery which has been set aside, kind of thing. It's called a roundabout, but I suppose it looks like a roundabout because you could drive a small car around it.
Absolutely, yeah.
But it is a path, isn't it? It's actually a path.
It is. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. That's right. So we've been working with the council, and a local resident has made a really good contribution to the project for the last couple of years, and so it allowed us to wildflower seed the area. So this is
have you got the name of the local resident? Are we going to name names?
So the local resident was Prue, so she helped fund the project.
She's a town councillor, isn't she?
I think X, I'm not sure X. At the moment, I think,
Good. And so the work that you're going to be doing on the roundabout is going to be, because that's not going to be raking, is it? Or is it?
Yes, it'll be raking as well. So we'll be cutting that tomorrow and then leaving it for a day, because we want that to set its seed that's already in the wildflowers for a couple of days, and then we'll rake that off on Friday afternoon.
Right. And where will you take the rakings from the arboretum? Where would that go?
So it will stay on the arboretum. So it'll just go to the margins and the sides, and some of it will stay on the meadow. It's just habitat piles. So I mean, they're great little places for insects and invertebrates to get into. So having those piles is really good.
Sure, good. And so give us that email address in case anybody locally would like to get involved.
So it's parklifesw@gmail.com.
Wonderful. Well, I think we've covered that really nicely. Thank you so much, Andrew Price, for joining us this morning and talking all about that. Ranger for Ivy Bridge. And how big is your area, by the way, just very quickly?
For park life, eventually it'll be the whole Devon and Cornwall, but at the moment we're predominantly in and around the South Hams area, right. But we are stretching further afield.
Good. So are you looking for people to conscript into the fold from further afield?
So if there are projects people are interested to talk to us about, please get in contact, and we're always looking to engage with new projects with the local community.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for your time and giving up your time for this morning. And thank you for bringing us the bells of the Ivy Bridge Town Hall as well. That was I enjoyed those. And you've chosen the XX to finish off with, the Islands. Is your genre of music, isn't it? I can tell.
It is. It's a bit more ambient, this one. But yeah, the XX, love them. Seen them live, the brilliant band. Just really enjoy their music. And this is one of my favourite songs of theirs.
Great stuff. Thank you very much, Andrew. And we'll be back tomorrow on the Full Totness Breakfast on Sound Art Radio 102.5. Stay tuned for Morning Connections. And we'll be back tomorrow. Bye.